Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hello and welcome to the Motor City Hoops Podcast. If you are new to the Motor City Hoops Podcast, I'm your host, Bryce Simon, a former D1 hooper, current teacher, coach, husband, father of three amazing kids, and contributor at Detroit Bad Boys of SB Nation. Before we get started with this one, I've been teasing some big and exciting news, and it is time to let everyone know what that is. I first want to spend a quick second thanking just a few people. Vlad Moldovanu, my former teammate and current pro, who originally started Motor City Hoops and asked me to join him. Without him, I would never be doing what I'm getting the pleasure of doing. Mike Klinzing, creator of the Hoop Heads Podcast Network, for giving us the place to start. Wes Davenport, who is every bit a part of Motor City Hoops as me, and every listener, follower, subscriber, and individual who has supported, listened, or interacted with me in the podcast. You seriously have no idea how much I appreciate you and love that the podcast has grown to what it is. As you know, all of this has progressed into a relationship and partnership with Detroit Bad Boys, with the amazing opportunity given to us by Sean Corp and Laz Jackson, and I can't thank them enough. And now, it's time for myself and Motor City Hoops to grow once again, as I've been offered an absolutely unbelievable opportunity to create a new podcast with a co-host I could never imagine. With absolutely incredible pleasure and excitement, let me introduce you to my new co-host on our new podcast, The Pistons Pulse, starting March 1st.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Omari Sankofa II, Pistons beat writer for the Detroit Free Press, and I'm extremely excited to team up with Bryce for our new podcast, which will be hosted through the Detroit Free Press, The Pistons Post. Me and Bryce have talked about this. Seems like it's been a long time, and it kind of has been a long time. I think we started talking about it back last fall, and it's just great to be able to just be sitting here and being able to announce it, because we're just both so thrilled to be able to be doing this every single week. We're going to have a new podcast where you are. We'll have special episodes here and there, whether it's, you know, for the draft or free agency or just a notable basketball game. And I think what will make this podcast really great is that, you know, of course, myself being a full-time beat writer at the Free Press could give the insider perspective. And then Bryce, as you all know, all of you longtime Motor City Hoops listeners, he played at American University. He's coached basketball for a long time. And just from an X's and O's analysis, you know, just knowing what it's like to play the game, how the game works perspective, Bryce really is second to none. So the hope is that this partnership will, you know, make this a pod that you all can listen to weekly and really just get a full perspective of where the Pistons are. And we hope that we can, you know, help you through your fandom or just understanding of the Pistons as a team and organization. And this will be a weekly stop for you all.
Yeah, so every Tuesday, we'll continue to drop on Tuesdays about a 55-minute episode. And as Omari said, I reached out kind of, you know, Omari and I have had a little bit of a friendship relationship going back to the summer. We recorded the first time together at Summer League. And I was just like, I'm going to go on a whim. Like, I'm going to try this out. I'm going to see if Omari would have any interest in, you know, joining me as a co-host. And he said yes. And we, you know, he threw the idea to Detroit Free Press. And then I don't know, Omari, I feel like they just kind of built on it from there and they've really gotten behind it. So this will be a podcast completely brought to you by the Detroit Free Press. And you can find it on their website. It'll be a completely new podcast feed. So the Pistons Pulse, and I'll keep letting you know about this on Twitter over the upcoming episodes. I am going to finish out the month of February with Motor City Hoops. And then the Pistons Pulse first episode will be March 1st. But it will be a new podcast feed. And that podcast feed is not out yet when you are listening to this on Wednesday morning. Hopefully, we are hoping by the end of the week, by Friday, maybe at the latest, the beginning of next week, that podcast feed for The Pistons Pulse, brought to you by the Detroit Free Press, will be out with the trailer so you know what we're going to be all about. But that podcast feed, again, and the trailer are not out yet. Check back the end of the week. I'll put it on social media. I'll put it out on any episode so you know when the podcast feed is definitely out and when you can go check out the trailer. You can find the links on the Freep website. We will have them on Detroit Bad Boys website as well. My relationship with Detroit Bad Boys is not going away. I'll still write the articles. But as Omari said, I am juiced about this. It's been a long time coming. And I think Freep is as well, Omari.
No, they are 100%. I think the podcast space is a space that's grown exponentially over the last decade. And it just makes sense. You know, it just makes sense to have the Pistons podcast. I think there's a lot of great podcasts in the market. You know, I don't think there are too many podcast listeners who are only listening to one pod right now. And it just makes sense. You know, I think that there's space. And it's just a new way to reach new listeners as well. And I also add that I still think the Murder City Hoop spirit will still be pretty strong in this podcast. When I first joined Bryce to do his show last summer, it was actually during Summer League. We were in Las Vegas and Bryce made the trip down there. And, you know, and I was there and Bryce reached out and it just really stood out to me just how organized the pod was, just the, you know, the topics and, you know, how we researched everything was, you know, so when we got together a few months later and talked about, you know, doing a co-pod, it just made sense. You know, I just think it made sense. And we are both thankful for the Free Press for giving us the space to do this every single week. So we think it'll be a lot of fun. And, you know, we're definitely eager for you all to join us on this ride.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I don't think it's going to change a lot. Obviously, the name changes, Freep being behind changes, Omari being weekly is the biggest change. And that I just think that makes the podcast even better. The fact that he's willing to co-host it with me and be on it every week. You guys all know what Omari brings to the table as a Pistons beat writer. And I hope you guys are as excited about this as we are, that you will make the move with us to The Pistons Pulse. I'll continue to plug it on the upcoming episodes and on Twitter. Make sure you follow Omari. Omari, can you give your Twitter and maybe the Free social media for the listeners as well?
Sure. So you can follow me on Twitter at my first and last name. That's Omari, S as in Sam, Ankofa. And then you can follow Freep Sports at, it's the way it sounds, FreepSports.
Yeah, so make sure you follow those on Twitter, any social media. Make sure you're following me if you aren't at Motor City Hoops on Twitter. And again, I hope you guys are excited about this as we are. I'll continue to update you and give you news over the next couple weeks. And make sure you tune in March 1st. And let's get to today's episode and our amazing guest that is joining us to break down every move that was made around the NBA at the trade deadline, or as many as we can get through in 45 minutes. Could not have thought of a better person to join me for this, contributor at SpotTrack, Celtics Blog, and the Front Office Show, Keith Smith. Keith, welcome back to Motor City Hoops, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's just get right into this one, Keith. Let's talk about the deal that is most interesting to Pistons fans, and that is the four-team deal, Marvin Bagley III coming to Detroit. I want to ask, because we've broke down Marvin Bagley III, we've seen him in action now on Monday night. I want to get right to a question a lot of fans have, and that's about the cap hold, the qualifying offer, and all that stuff with Marvin Bagley III. Can you break that down for our fans, please?
Yeah, sure. So the Pistons have the ability to make him a restricted free agent this offseason. How you do that is you issue a qualifying offer to the player. That's what makes them restricted. That allows you to match any contract offer that they may get. That's the simplest way to explain restricted free agency. Or what they can do is not give him a qualifying offer, and then he becomes a non-restricted free agent, and then he can sign with whoever he wants, including still the Pistons if they want to. They just don't have any kind of match rights to hold him. Now, where it gets a little interesting with Bagley, and I've seen some confusion about this across kind of the NBA world here, is he has a $28.3 million cap hold this offseason. And that's because what they do is the higher first round picks it's basically 250% of their prior year's salary is what gets their cap hold comes in at. And that's because hopefully you got that pick right. And that means that guys are going to be signing for a max or near max deal, you know, when they come up to free agency. That cap hold does not change, no matter what happens with Bagley, as far as the qualifying offer can go. Now, the qualifying offer can change. As it stands today, that qualifying offer is $14.76 million. If he does not meet the starter criteria, which means he doesn't start 41 games this year or play 2,000 minutes or average 41 starts or average 2,000 minutes over the this year plus last year, it's probably not going to get there, but we'll see. Then his cap hole drops, his qualifying offer drops down to that which is equal to the 15th pick in his same draft class, which happens to be Troy Brown Jr. For that draft class, and that would be a $7.2 million qualifying offer. So about half is the easiest way to think of that. Now, that changes nothing as far as the Pistons cap space goes. Their projection, if they keep Marvin Bagley, the third's cap hold, they're going to be over the cap. There's almost no way for them to get underneath the cap if they hold on to his cap hold and keep his free agent rights. The other option is they can renounce him, not give him a qualifying offer, renounce his free agent rights, go the kind of maximum cap space route they can get to. I'm sure we'll get into that in just a minute here. And that's their option. Nothing changes. They can still re-sign him. They can still bring him back. It doesn't remove their ability to do that. They just can't exceed the cap using his bird rights to do that. What changes with the qualifying offer, though, is if you offer him a one-year contract offer, and that means he could sign that. If it's the 14.76, you offer him that, he's on your books next season for 1 year at $14.76 million. Then he becomes an unrestricted free agent in the summer of 2023. Or if that qualifying offer is halved because he doesn't meet that starter criteria, and he signs it, he's on your books for $7.2 million. And that's, starts to become a little bit more of a reasonable offer. But again, does not change the cap hold at all.
Okay, so I have I had just seen that the other day about the average of the last 2 years. So I'm glad you brought that up as well. So I want to, when can they sign him to an extension? What if he played well enough that Troy Weaver said, we want Marvin Bagley here, we'll offer him a 3-year, whatever million-dollar deal, and not even mess with the qualifying offer and the cap hold and all of that stuff. Is that a possibility to do, or would they have to not give him the qualifying offer and then try to do it as an unrestricted free agent?
Yeah, unfortunately, because he's a first round pick whose contract is expiring, they operate under a different set of rules than everybody else with extensions. So they can no longer offer him a contract extension. What they could do is, and I'm completely making this up, this isn't any kind of sourced reporting or anything, but let's say they said, hey, we're all agreement of a 3-year, $30 million contract feels right for Marvin Bagley III. An average of $10 million a year. What they could do is they could do it a couple different ways. Either they could just kind of talk about that now, have that in their back pocket, and then when we hit free agency, they could immediately re-sign him to that contract that would drop him right into their books at $10 million when everything opens, and then they'd have the rest left over in potential cap space. Or you could go the route of, we're not going to do the qualifying offer, we're going to renounce you, we're going to open up all this cap space, and then we're going to go that direction. And it's really, at that point, it doesn't really kind of matter because you're getting to the same end result. Anyway, with Bagley, you're just going about it two different ways.
So let me ask you just this direct question, because listening to this, it clears up a lot for me. I hope it does for our listeners as well. But I feel like there's no way the qualifying offer and that $28 million cap hold happens then.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with this. He has not been, to me, I would have fear if I offered him a $14.7 million qualifying offer that he would immediately sign it and say, yeah, I'll play 1 year at almost $15 million, because he's not going to get that much in a 1-year contract as a free agent. I mean, he would have to be, incredible over these next couple months down the stretch here with the Pistons to even get to that level. So what I would do is I would basically say, no, if it's the $7 million qualifying offer, that maybe changes things just slightly, because I'm not as worried about him signing that. But it's that $28 million cap hold
yes.
that makes all the difference, because that takes you completely out of the free agent mix.
And so that cap hold only – one last question on this, and then sure. I will move on a little bit. But that cap hold only stays until he would sign the qualifying offer. When he signs the qualifying offer, let's say at the 7.2 or what 1 or whatever it is, then that becomes his cap number. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Whatever you – in – 99 times out of 100 situations, whatever you sign for, that becomes your cap number.
Okay, so that cap hold would be 28 until he would sign the the qualifying offer, but you would be at the mercy of him signing it. And correct. Especially with what you've tweeted out, right before we started recording this on Tuesday night, the Pistons go into the offseason or look like they could go into the offseason with the most cap of anybody in the NBA. Again, can you just give the listeners a little, like, is that if they renounce any team options? I think Corey Joseph has a player option. Where does that number come from, I guess, for you, Keith?
Yeah, so what I do is I go through and I do this exercise multiple times a year for all 30 teams. And generally, the tent poles are kind of at the start of the year, pre-trade deadline, post-trade deadline. And then I'll do it again right before the start of the offseason, like usually right around the draft period. I'll do this. So what I do is I go through, I basically project everything out for every team of, all right, this is what they have for guaranteed money on the books. These are their options. I make an option projection. So a lot of it can be, I'm getting all verklempt talking about cap space. I love it so much. hey, what I'll do is I'll use sourced reporting as we get closer to option decisions, as far as what a player or a team might be leaning on somebody, what they might be doing with a non-guarantee. I use projected draft picks in there. So when I project out a cap space number, it's full. It's inclusive of every possible thing that could be inclusive. So where I'm at with the Detroit Pistons is they are sitting on right now 8 players with guaranteed money for next year. And I can just run through them real quick without going through the numbers, but it's Sadiq Bey, Cade Cunningham, Jeremy Grant, Killian Hayes, Sabin Lee, Isaiah Livers, Kelly Olynyk, and Isaiah Stewart. Then they have, I guess, unfortunately is the way I'll term it, they have $11.7 million in dead money on the books. Now, Blake Griffin clears away, but they've still
thank
got
you, DeAndre
Deadman.
Jordan.
Yep, DeAndre Jordan's the big one. And then they still have Zaire Smith for 1 year. So you're sitting there. Then you kind of get into, all right, now we're into decision time. And that's the guys with the option decisions and guys who are going to be free agents. So what I project to happen with the Detroit Pistons this offseason is I think Corey Joseph will opt in to his $5.1 million player option. I just think that's a number that's probably above what he's looking at if he was to go the free agent route.
Agreed. Yep.
I think the Pistons will renounce Marvin Bagley. I think they will decline the team options for Hamidou Diallo and Frank Jackson and then renounce the two of them, as well as the team option for Luka Garza and renounce him. And then Rodney Magruder is an unrestricted free agent. I believe they'll renounce them. That gets me to a projected cap space for the Pistons with the number one overall pick is what I'm projecting to them right now. That's where it gets a little wonky, right? Because we clearly don't have the lottery factored in here, but we just do that off a record. And then you have to make an assumption somewhere that, you know, the lottery will go to form. I have them at a projected cap space of $31.4 million.
Okay, and that is great because I think a lot of Pistons fans see the number that you put out, and I don't think they realize always that the pick has been factored in, which is important to note, but also for our listeners, if you were listening to that, like Marvin Bagley III would not factor into that. Frank Jackson, Hamidou Diallo, not factoring into that money. So if those are guys that listeners are counting on being back next year, because those are club options for those guys, that's not factored into the $31.4 million that Keith has tweeted out. So I'm really glad that we asked you that and you walked us through that. I really appreciate that, Keith.
Yeah, one thing I will say too is it's going to be really important for like me and even other teams to be doing a lot of digging around what might happen with guys like Diallo and Jackson. Because there is a world where Troy Weaver could look at it and say, this free agent class stinks. There is nobody I want to give a bunch of money to. I'm better off keeping, you know, Hamidou Diallo and keeping Frank Jackson for a combined $8.3 million than I am letting either one of them go. I might be better off, kind of rolling this into one more year with those two guys, because I may not be able to get replacement level guys for them. Bagley, I'm a little bit more confident in, just because that's very much an either or. Either you have Marvin Bagley with his full cap holder, or you have cap space. So that's kind of your either or decision. You can keep Diallo and Jackson and eat into your cap space number a little bit, which brings you more back down in range with the other teams that project to have space this summer.
Absolutely. I want to ask real quick about Jerami Grant, and then I do want to get into this trade as a whole and look at it from at least one other team side, and then also the other trades, including your Boston Celtics, who were very active at the trade deadline with a few moves. Jerami Grant, why do you think he didn't get moved? Is there anything you heard? Just your opinion? Whatever you want to give us, Keith, I'm comfortable with. But he was a name that was talked a lot about. I'll be honest with you. Pistons fans, a lot of Pistons fans were actually very disappointed he was not traded at the trade deadline. What did you think about the fact that Jerami Grant stayed in Detroit?
Yeah, there was a point where leading up to the trade deadline, he was one of the guys on our show, on a NBA front office show, that I was saying I was most confident was going to get traded. And that included even after the Kings made their first trade, the one to get Domantas Sabonis, and they made it kind of clear, we're not going to trade Harrison Barnes. There were a lot of teams I know that were looking at Grant or Barnes. They kind of had the two of them of, all right, that's the forward, the 3-4 forward that's got some range, can play defense. They're kind of, either or kind of guys for us. But the Pistons wanted a really solid return for Jerami Grant from everything I was told, and teams just weren't willing to meet that number. And what the intel I was able to gather was Troy Weaver and crew said, Jerami Grant doesn't necessarily, he's not one of these guys, we're sure we're going to get into a few of them, that were saying, I don't want to be here anymore, get me out of town. He was never that kind of guy. And they felt very comfortable with, hey, let's keep him. If we want to trade him, we can always do it at the draft. We can do it this summer when the offseason comes. If that's where we want to go, maybe there'll be a better deal for us then to move Jerami Grant. And that could be even something where they do that at the draft or early enough in the offseason, you could see that be almost a way to, all right, we're going to do this, and now we're going to keep Bagley around and hang on to his cap hole because we're going to move Jerami Grant just for straight space or something like that. Well, we'll see how that all comes together. But that's what I was told on Jerami Grant, was they just didn't get the offers they liked, and they didn't feel a real need to move him at the deadline for something less than what they wanted.
Very good. And so as you were talking about, what about a sign and trade? Do you think, like, is there an advantage to keeping Jerami Grant around that maybe a restricted free agent or something like that, that the Pistons, like, they've been linked to a few different guys. I don't know how serious it is. But, Pistons fans obviously are super excited about the possible of Miles Bridges, DeAndre Ayton. I believe Brunson is an unrestricted free agent. But is there a world where Jerami Grant still on the books with the Pistons actually helps facilitate a sign and trade better than if he wasn't?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. Let's do the Miles Bridges one just, for fun. If they really wanted to go down the route of getting Miles Bridges, what they could do is do a sign and trade where Jerami Grant becomes a big chunk of that salary matching for Miles Bridges. Let's just call it even. Let's say Jerami Grant, roughly $21 million. Let's say Miles Bridges comes in on a first-year contract making $21 million. You could do a straight trade of those two guys, and then if you're the Pistons, you're sitting there with Miles Bridges now, plus you're still sitting on your $31 million of cap space. Even if Miles Bridges comes in at 28, 29, 30 million, a max deal for Miles Bridges, you could still do that as a sign and trade where Jerami Grant counts as $21 million towards the matching salary. You make up the rest with cap space. And in that scenario, let's say he comes in at a full max at $30.2 million, which is what that projects at. You're sitting there at about $9-ish million difference. You'd still be sitting there at about $22 million in cap space plus Miles Bridges if you moved on Jerami Grant to a team like the Hornets, who, the reason why I wanted to play that one out a little bit is you could almost kind of maybe see the Hornets saying, we don't really want to pay Miles Bridges this kind of money. Jerami Grant's a pretty nice addition to keep us, relevant here in the playoff chase, at least for one more year. We'll figure it out with him extension wise and those kind of things. And that could be something you could see play out that way.
Okay, good. I was hoping that I was at least, you know, thinking the right way about that, that could come into play in the offseason with some of these free agents. And like you say, then you keep some of that cap space that we've talked a lot about. But let's get to another side of this deal and then again to some of the other trades, because I did want to get around the NBA with you and not just Detroit Piston talk. So that deal sent DiVincenzo, Lyles, and Josh Jackson to Sacramento, Ibaka, and two Pistons second round picks, not their own, but two that they own the rights to Milwaukee.
That have been through the mill a little bit.
Yes. The Clippers, Rodney Hood, and Semi Ojeleye. I want to actually ask about the Milwaukee Bucks. Do you think Serge Ibaka, because they're obviously a team of all those teams that's like a championship caliber team that's trying to win an NBA championship, do you think Serge Ibaka makes an impact with them? And if so, how big of an impact?
Yeah, I think he has a chance to be pretty good for them. What they were looking for was a get-by guy while they're without Brook Lopez. Now, there was reporting right before the deadline that they're hopeful Brook Lopez will return before the end of the season. And I think we've kind of collective amnesia maybe on just how important he is to that Bucks team. He anchors the back line of their defense, huge part of their team. They really miss him offensively too. We think about his, you know, floor spacing, but he is the one guy on that team who, when the offense is really kind of bogged down, that they can throw it into Lopez in the post and say, go get us a bucket. So what we're looking at, I think, now with Ibaka is he's not a perfect replacement for Lopez because he's not doing any kind of low post scoring, but he can space the floor a little bit with the range on his jump shot. He can provide you that rim protection. You at least now don't have to hopefully overextend Bobby Portis and Giannis by asking them to really kind of split the 48 center minutes per game. By what you can do is you can say, all right, you know what? We can get Ibaka in there for 15, 20 minutes a night. And it's probably not going to be great, but it at least gets us by.
Okay, let's move on to, is it okay if I call him your Boston Celtics, Keith? Is that okay?
That's fine. I mean, I wish they were mine. I'd be a little bit more willing to duck into the luxury tax than they are, but we'll see. But yeah, that's fine, man. You can okay. call him mine.
All right. Boston Celtics trade for Derek White, send Josh Richardson, Romeo Langford, top four protected first round pick, and a 2028 pick swap. We will talk about the return in just a second because I do want to ask about that. But I've heard a lot of really positive, and I don't catch a ton of Spurs games. Our listeners know this, that I'm pretty invested in the Pistons. I don't do a lot other than box score watch the rest of the NBA. I catch a game when I get a chance. But I've heard a lot of really, really positive things, and some negative, but mostly positive about Derek White joining this Boston team, and that he's just a really, really good fit and makes them really tough defensively.
Yeah, that's the big one, is the defense for him. He is a absolute terrific fit with the way they want to defend, because what the Celtics want to do is they want to switch everything 1 through 5. They believe in having big switchable defenders, bigs that can step out to the perimeter, smalls that can hold their own against bigs inside. They're not worried about, maybe other than it's kind of odd we're recording this right before they're going to play the Philadelphia 76ers. But other than the Sixers, they're not really worried about any bigs kind of going down inside and backing their guys down and putting them in the goal old school style. And they also trust that we can scramble out of those. We can switch around. We can do what we need to do to get guys. So White is a perfect fit in with that group, because what he'll allow them to do is he's really kind of the replacement for both Josh Richardson and Dennis Schroeder. But in the closing groups and in the late game minutes, he's the replacement for Schroeder, who is closing a lot of those games. And because he's a lot bigger, he's a lot better of a defender. They don't have to change anything the way they want to defend. He could shoot it better. He's not a great shooter from the outside. I think he's better than what he's shown this year. He's already shown a little bit with the Celtics that he's getting more open looks, which would make sense, right? With the Celtics, he's got Tatum and Brown and Robert Williams as a lob threat. Those guys are all kind of drawing attention that it was kind of him and DeJounte Murray in San Antonio creating everything. So hopefully with more open looks, we'll see his percentage go up. But the other thing is he's just a natural playmaker. So he's another guy. As the Celtics, one of the things they've done in the really since the calendar turn of 2022 was play this much quicker, much more up-tempo style where the ball's really moving around and they get a bunch of guys who can attack, second attack to the paint, even a third attack into the paint, and a drive and a kick. and White fits in with that perfectly, where Schroeder was a little bit more catch it, hold, survey, wait for a screen, dribble into a mid-ranger. It's not necessarily bad. It's just different, and it didn't really fit with the way the Celtics want to run their offense.
And of course, the Pistons will get a firsthand look of this on Wednesday night. Hopefully when you're listening to this Wednesday morning, so you'll see it tonight, or will have already happened depending on when you catch the episode. And I'm going to be honest, Keith, I'm a little nervous about the Pistons even getting to like 80, 90 points on Wednesday night. It wasn't pretty on Monday offensively, and with what the Celtics are doing defensively, I'm a little bit nervous. I know there was two other trades. You guys flipped Dozier, Bull Bull, second round pick for another. I assume that was just a cap space thing.
Yep. Straight salary dump to avoid the larger tax.
And then Schroeder, Bruno Fernando, and Enes Freedom, who was waived, for Daniel Theis. Like, is that an under-radar nice little move there for Daniel Theis? Or are you excited about that? What kind of role is he going to have?
Yeah, we'll see. Daniel Theis played his best basketball when he was with the Celtics. Early in his career, he was Danny Ainge had kind of hit about 3 or 4 years in a row finding a guy overseas and bringing him over. And Theis was part of that mix. And he really had become a really quality guy. He'd worked his way into being their starting center on a team that went to the East Finals and the teams that won an awful lot of games. So what the Celtics are hoping for with him is he is a massive upgrade over Enes Freedom, who is playing the fourth big role, because they've basically given their big man minutes when everybody's healthy to Robert Williams and Al Horford both start, and then Grant Williams plays the rest. So that group of those three play out of the 96 minutes at the two big positions, they probably play about 80 minutes a game between those three guys. And then you play small a little the rest of the time there. But what they have with Theis now, and we're going to see this actually, unfortunately, tonight, Robert Williams has some calf tightness and isn't going to play against the 76ers here on Tuesday. So what you're going to see is Daniel Theis is going to slide in and play more minutes as a kind of that insurance big behind Horford and Grant Williams in this case. But on a regular night, Theis may only see 5-10 minutes in a game, as it's, they're pretty comfortable with that three big rotation. But when he does need to play, the difference when they had Enes in there was you had to completely changed the way you played defense. You couldn't switch. You had to either that, or you're going to switch one through four around one, kind of leave him hanging out around the basket. And they did a lot of different things to try to work around it. With Theis, you could just do everything you do with Horford and the two Williams without any concerns. It may take him, it's going to probably be a couple weeks for him to get, fully back up to speed and ready to go. But they're really comfortable with him. The trade-off is they took on some kind of questionable, long-term money over the next couple of years, but the Celtics are setting themselves up to be in a position where they're pretty good, and then they're going to have a whole bunch of these mid-range tradable contracts that they can pile together in a deal if they need to.
Okay, so you just said pretty good there, so I think I know what your answer is going to be on this. Are the Celtics, as it stands right now, are they kind of under the radar contenders in the East?
I think they're climbing into that status. I don't know that they're quite there yet. I think let's see. I mean, they've won 8 in a row, but it hasn't been against the best competition. Now, where I'll flip that is, I'm not going to rip them for that because they were losing to those bad teams earlier in the year. You can only play the teams in front of you on the schedule. So I think what happens with the Celtics is we're going to see them get into a position where if they can keep winning games and start beating some of the better teams, I think they have a shot. And I think the reason why is, you touched on it a minute ago, is their defense is really, really, really good. Since the first of the year, it's been the best in the NBA, and it's not even close. It's by a really healthy margin. I want to say it's almost by 6 points per 100 possessions that they are better. It's getting very difficult to crack 100 points on these guys. So if they can defend like that, they're going to be in just about every game. And now they've got kind of the versatility, the size all across the board to switch, to play a bunch of different ways. So let's see what they do against some better teams, but I think they have a chance to make some noise in the postseason.
I just took a huge big sigh as you were talking about how good the defense was, as I think about the Pistons having to play them on Wednesday night, but we'll see. All right. to a couple teams that absolutely are contenders in the East. The biggest trade of the day, I think we all know this. I just want to get your initial thoughts. James Harden for Ben Simmons. I know there was more to the trade than that. Seth Curry, I think, is a really nice piece. I think he had a really good night on Monday night, actually, for the Nets. Two first-round picks involved. But what were your initial thoughts whenever you saw that trade go down?
Yeah, my first initial thought is, thank God it's over on both sides. And we're moving on from this. That's my initial thought. That makes me happier than just about any other thing that we have. And hopefully we're going to get past this new report every day about why somebody was sad and mopey in Brooklyn or Philly. But when I look at it basketball-wise, I think my initial thoughts match my thoughts today. And it is, I think Philly has a chance to make out really, really well here in the short term, maybe as soon as this season. If you get a motivated, healthy James Harden, that it was along with Joel Embiid playing the way he is. I mean, he's just been kind of laying waste to the entire league. You could see that team win a championship. There's no doubt in my mind. Now, when you look at Philly's side of it is, Brooklyn's side of things, it may take a little while longer. We don't know. We still don't know when Kevin Durant's going to be back. We don't know what it'll look like. Kyrie Irving's still a part-time player. Let's see what it looks like for Ben Simmons to play when he hasn't played, competitive basketball in, what are we looking at now? 7-8 months at this point by the time he'll play. So that starts to become the kind of questions that I'm asking with this team is, how are you going to look? But I think long-term, that has a chance to be pretty good for them too, because I'm not one of these people who is fully out on Ben Simmons. I know a lot of people are, they're not fans anymore because the lasting impression is him not shooting the ball, passing up a dunk, and not playing well in the playoffs. And I think maybe there's been some collective amnesia on the fact that this guy's still the best 1-5 defender in the league. He's equally good at all five positions defensively. He's still a really talented playmaker with the ball in his hands. He can still be really good if you let him push the ball. I think he has a chance to kind of be maximized playing alongside Durant and Irving, and let's see what it ultimately looks like. But if you're playing him as kind of the pseudo Draymond Green type of role, then you've opened Ben Simmons up quite a bit. Now that's where I think, I don't know that happens right now, but I think down the line, that has a chance to look pretty good for Brooklyn.
I mean, I'm just looking at it from Ben Simmons' perspective. Like, he couldn't have – I feel like he fell into a really good spot for him to be successful, and now it's on Ben Simmons to – be able to make the best of it. And I'm really interested to see. I haven't been out on Ben Simmons either. I've looked through playoff, stats and stuff. It's like, it wasn't like it was 6-point games all through his playoff career. Like, he put up huge numbers in games, in the playoffs, in the regular season. I want to ask a real quick, just technical question. It came across my phone today. James Harden's, it wouldn't be his player op. What would it be called right now that he didn't, the paperwork didn't get through or something? Did I see that correctly?
Yeah. So he has a player option for next season. It's a $47.4 million player option. And what I think caused confusion was there was a report when the trade was made that he was going to opt in as part of that trade, which you can do. You can do it kind of all at once and say, yeah, as part of the trade, I'm opting in for next season. It sounds like that part didn't happen when the trade went down. So he still has the ability at any point to opt in for next season. He says he's going to. He says he's not leaving town. He's either going to opt in or he's going to opt out. There's some reporting out there that he may opt out and actually sign a lesser contract than what he could take to give Philadelphia maybe the ability to go get another player around him and Joel Embiid. So let's see where that ultimately goes. But yeah, I think it's almost natural the way these things go of, hey, this didn't happen. What does this mean? Is he leaving? He doesn't want to be here and all that stuff. And I kind of get where the fear could come in because this guy has not been happy in his last couple stops. But my guess is this is just going to be he and Daryl Morey are smart enough to align this to get him paid and put things in a pretty good place going forward.
Okay. All right. I'm glad I asked then and we were able to clear that up. So we have Keith for about 15-20 minutes here. So we may have to run through these a little bit quicker, but I put this one as in the most head-scratching trade of the day. And maybe you didn't think it was, but it sure seemed like the one – that didn't make a whole lot of sense. And it's not the Tyrese Halliburton one. I put that as the biggest shock. Most head scratching was for me, Kristaps Porzingis to Washington, Spencer Dinwiddie and Bertans to Dallas. Like, what am I missing here that I shouldn't be missing, Keith, that where this makes more sense?
I don't know that I'm going to make you scratch your head any less. I think you might be just as confused on this one as I am a little bit here. This one definitely screams we both just want out of these contracts. Clearly Washington, things were not going well for them. Now there's been all this reporting that's come out about how unhappy everybody was on the Wizards. And by the time they finally got healthy, it was almost a bad thing, because then they had like 14 guys who needed to play the four and the five. And it's just, no one's going to be happy in that situation. So And Spencer Dinwiddie was not playing well for them. So I think for them, it was a chance of, all right, let's clear these two guys out. And you know what? We'll become the new team to take a shot on Porzingis. Maybe he gets healthy. Maybe he can really do something. Maybe he'll finally figure it all out here in Washington. And from the Dallas side, I think it was, you know what? We're done waiting on this guy. We're done saying, all right, maybe next year. Let's get, Davis Bertans, who just a couple years ago was one of the best shooters in the league. Let's get him in here, see if we can figure that out, get him back to where he was. Let's get Dinwiddie in here, somebody everybody liked a couple years ago before he got hurt. Maybe we can figure it out by playing him in a less pressure reserve role and those kind of things. And you know what? Let's just clear out the Porzingis question. So I don't have a lot more to it than that. Let's see, how these guys perform, because the money's about equal on both sides, over the next couple of years. So let's see where this one goes. But yeah, this one definitely came out of nowhere. There's a clip of me and my co-host Trevor Lane reacting to this live. And I think his response was perfect. He took a beat. He looked a little quizzical. And then he said, why? So I think that was pretty good.
And so the Pistons side of me has to ask this question, because Jalen Brunson, I don't know, I don't want to say linked, but there's just been conversations. It may be Pistons fans that talk about it. I don't know that there's been like necessarily reporting. I feel like there has a little bit. Is the Spencer Dinwiddie in any way, Keith, a possible insurance policy of Jalen Brunson actually leaving Dallas this offseason?
Yeah, I think it is, at least to some extent. All indications are that the Mavericks are going to do what they need to do to keep Jalen Brunson. I think if they had their way, he'd sign an extension today, which would look an awful lot like the one Dorian Finney-Smith just signed. But if you're Jalen Brunson, you're betting on a bigger payday. You're thinking, I might be able to get $20 million, just because you start looking at the free agent list and who might be out there. He's pretty high on that list,
because yes, he
he's a pretty good player. Now, the challenge is, if you're Jalen Brunson, if we go through those kind of cap space teams this summer, well, Portland's not giving him a bunch of money because they have Damian Lillard. San Antonio has DeJounte Murray because they're not giving him a bunch of money. Orlando has a host of different guards. The Pacers just acquired Tyrese Halliburton. So if I'm Jalen Brunson, I'm really thinking, all right, Mavs, do I know I can get paid from you? Or you know what? I'm going to go at least have a conversation with the Detroit Pistons and see if I can get a chunk of that cap space. And I don't hate that idea for the Pistons. I'm not fully sold that Cade Cunningham is a point guard per se. I think what he is a high volume wing. And there is a difference. And that's not a knock on Cade Cunningham. I'm super excited about him. I think he is growing leaps and bounds almost by the game. You can see him figuring stuff out. But I do think what may be is, he may be best if he has somebody else to kind of help him a little bit more with the playmaking and backcourt scoring. And Jalen Brunson might be the guy to do that.
No, I don't disagree at all. I think I lean a little bit more towards he needs a big time scorer next to him.
Sure.
But I don't think you're incorrect at all in that he also needs someone to help with I think he can play off ball. And I think he needs to play off ball at time. We've seen him get tired and worn down. Like, I watch from home, so I hate to do that and say things like that, but just watching the games, I feel like you can see him get worn down, because he does impact the game in so many ways. He's an engaged defender. He rebounds. He does a lot of things. And so I don't think it would hurt to have another guy handle the ball and let him play off the ball some as well. You brought up Tyrese Halliburton. That, for me, was the biggest shock of the day, mostly because I don't think anybody saw Tyrese Halliburton getting moved. I want to ask this specific question, though, Keith. Was the value for Tyrese Halliburton, the return that the Kings got, We can talk about the fit. Like, was it really as bad as, because I feel like people freaked out. Like, are you kidding me? You're trading Tyrese Haliburton. What did you just think about the value in terms of the return of Sabonis, Jeremy Lamb, Justin Holiday, and a second round pick?
Yeah, things went way too far in that direction, especially on Twitter and social media and the like. It was like we traded, I'm going to date myself a little bit here, but Michael Jordan for, John Konkak or, somebody like that. Like, it's, what are we doing here? This is not, I like Tyrese Haliburton. He's one of my favorite young players in the league, but like, he's not, it's not like he is Ja Morant. This early in his career where it's like, oh man, you might have just traded away an MVP. I think Tyrese Haliburton might be an all-star at least multiple times, but he's got work to do to get there. And the thing is, Domantas Sabonis has already been an all-star a couple times. And I know he's not everybody's favorite all-star and people aren't super high on him and they don't think he's, all that great and everything that gets said about him, but I think he's a pretty good player. And I think the Kings did kind of okay here. I would have preferred, probably like everybody, move De'Aaron Fox and keep Haliburton, but that wasn't on the table. You got to give something to get something. And I think watching the Kings play their first couple games after the trade deadline with Sabonis in the lineup, you can kind of see what the thought process was. Is it doesn't have to be all De'Aaron Fox. Fox can play off Sabonis. We can run some stuff through him at the elbow or at the high post as a central hub, and we could do some different stuff. And they kept Barnes, and they're playing okay. This is one of those trades where I think we may look back at this in a couple years and say, despite all the reaction, the way it happened, that was actually pretty good for both teams.
Yeah. I mean, Sabonis is 25. His contract is very, very manageable right now. Really good contract. Yep. And so that was my thing. Like I had the same reaction as everybody else. And I tweeted out, like, I did not expect Haliburton to get traded, but the more you think about it, it's like, maybe it's a better fit. And like, they may end up being wrong, but you had Fox, you had Haliburton. Like, I'm not saying you should make franchise decisions necessarily on Davion Mitchell, but it opens up some stuff for Dave. Maybe they think he is better than what he's been able to show with more opportunities. I don't know, but it seems like Sabonis fits in really nice with what they need. I don't know. Like, I just, at least the value I didn't think was that bad. So
yeah, we're on the same page on that one.
Okay. Portland Trailblazers. We don't have time to break down every single deal. There's so many players, a lot of picks, all that stuff. Norman Powell, CJ McCollum, all out. Bledsoe, Winslow, Josh Hart, Keon Johnson, all those guys in. Here's what someone asked. What's the vision for the Portland Trailblazers, Keith? Because again, this plays into the Pistons a little bit as well. The Trailblazers were a team that reportedly that was interested in Jeremy Grant. I felt like, no, there's no way they're going to trade for him at the deadline because they want to punt on the rest of the season. Maybe they trade for him in the offseason now. Is that where Portland is? Let's punt on the rest of this season. Lillard will be back next season. They have cap space. Is that where they're at?
Yeah, there's a couple things at play with Portland. And I think the first one is they correctly looked at it and said, all right, we've done everything we can do with this group. We're not going any further now. This is as played out as it's going to get. And I think that gets taken almost the wrong way of, they gave up on it. But I look at it as you gave this thing almost a decade long run. And that's better than most people get with that. Now they changed pieces and parts around McCollum and Lillard for sure. But I mean, those were the core guys and they ran with them. So now the decision I think for the rest of this year is, I'm going to be surprised if we see Damian Lillard play again this year. I think it's going to be, you get 100% right coming back from that injury. Then they own their pick if it's in the lottery. If it's not in the lottery, it goes to Chicago. So I don't think Portland necessarily cares all that much about dropping down in the lottery. Now, as I say that, they've won three straight. And they've actually picked up a couple wins I don't think we expected. And I call the bottom play-in race in the West the pillow fight because it's just not a lot of good teams. They're just kind of – someone's going to stumble their way into it. But let's see what happens with Portland because I still think they'll be in the lottery because they'll get bounced in the first play-in game. Then – they get New Orleans pick if New Orleans pick falls between 5 and 14. So they're going to be hoping that the Pelicans are bad and then don't have any lottery luck, or they'll get a future pick. So what you did is you did that. You also completely reset your cap sheet. Their only big contract now that they've got left is Damian Lillard. You were locked in a 70 plus million between Lillard and McCollum. Now you've got Lillard and who knows what you're going to have for, you know, big money. It may be next to nothing. I project them to have cap space this offseason, which is a, you know, first time in a little while for them to have cap space. They also went from, I want to say they were $6 or $7 million over the tax before their deadline dealings. And they are now almost $16 million under the tax for the rest of the season. So they completely blew that roster up outside of Dame. They reset things and they put themselves in a position to do a lot of interesting stuff this summer.
Okay, I want to get to one more trade, and then I have a general salary cap question with the possible spike coming up. But I want to the Cavs-Pacers trade that involved Caris LeVert, Ricky Rubio, who was the salary match, and some draft picks. I don't want to necessarily get into the trade. What does this mean for Colin Sexton? I believe restricted free agency. Does this mean the Cavs are planning on not matching whatever offer he may get and moving on from Sexton this summer? Or do you think that's kind of what it shows?
I think there's a couple things at play here. I don't think they were going to be in a match any offer anyway for Sexton, because I think they now see with the way they've built that roster out that he's going to be a third guy in a three guard rotation. I just don't know that you can make it work with him in Garland. I don't know if it was intentional, but it's really good you're asking this question on the heels of just talking about Portland. And I think they're looking at it and saying Portland was good for a lot of years with two smaller guards, but never quite got over the hump. And I think the Cavs are probably looking at him being that could be us if we lock in here long term. Now, I think they like the idea of bringing Sexton back. I think they clearly they're not happy he got hurt, but they're going to use that if they can get him on a much more reasonable deal to come back next year, something that's a little team friendly, maybe still movable. But the reality is LeVert is a guy who can fit there with Sexton, without Sexton. So I think if a team wants Colin Sexton, like if you were looking at the Pistons, you're going to have to give a lot of that $31 million in cap space to him in an offer sheet to get Cleveland not to match it. And that's where that could get a little dangerous, because usually to get a restricted free agent, you have to overpay him. But if you go a little too far with that, now all of a sudden you're kind of stuck with a guy who, yeah, he's not bad, but boy, we wish we weren't sitting on $25 million a year for this guy.
Okay, last question, then I know we got to get you to the Celtics game tonight. The salary cap in general, I've just read a few things. Can we expect or anticipate a spike coming over the next few years based on, is it a TV deal, Keith, that the NBA is signing that is that something that teams are planning for with their cap space looking further into the future, and also even players who may want to sign a shorter deal and then get in, back into free agency sooner?
Yeah, so there's a couple things at play, and you're right. It's the new TV deal that's coming, and the one thing that we have seen continue to draw a ton of money from these networks is live sports. And the NBA is not necessarily opposed to – it may not be ABC, ESPN, TNT anymore. Maybe they open that up to Amazon or to Netflix or to, Disney Plus through the ESPN Plus app or whatever it is, as far as, hey, we may open this thing up to different ways to get this product to people. And we've heard Amazon is out there throwing around, hey, we may, buy the rights to, the NFL games and all those kind of things. So, Lord knows they've got more money than anybody else in the world to do kind of whatever they want to do. So the NBA knows we're going to get paid here. The sign that the league is in really good health. If we go back, let's look back over the last couple of years. In 2019-20, the pandemic season, they were at $109 million salary cap. They kept the flat cap flat into the next year because they lost so much money. It was going to be crazy to try to rework that, mostly just through having empty arenas. But then this year, what they agreed to was we'll go up by the bare minimum of 3%. So the cap went up. This next year, they were projected to go up not by the 3%, but by slightly more to $119 million. And then right before the trade deadline, the league came out with a new set of projections to their teams that was $121 million cap. So that says things are looking pretty good for the NBA, whether it's, the more fans in arenas, clearly that's helping, but also maybe it's merchandise sales, maybe it's other stuff, that's coming in. And what the league, I think, is really kind of looking at here moving forward is, all right, we feel pretty confident we're going to go. Now, what they don't want to do from a league perspective is they don't want another one of these giant cap spikes. If in the one everybody remembers yes. was 2016, where the cap went up by $14 million. They don't want that again.
Because there was some bad contract signed that year, Keith.
That's exactly it, man. What happens there is it all goes to one free agent class, and then it's a bunch of Timofey Mozgov, Luol Dengdales, and everybody's like, oh, what did we do? It's almost like the league went out, collectively got drunk and had a bad night. looking at that credit card bill the next day of like, what happened here? So what the NBA would like to see happen, and I think there's more momentum for it this time around, is smooth that out where – instead of jumping by, $10, $20 million in one season, it's let's progress this in $7 million, $7 million, $7 million. Whereas maybe it should have been $20 million, $3 million, $3 million. Let's do, $8 million a year or something like that. So what we're going to see here is the cap is going to continue to rise by how much. We don't know that just yet, but we're looking at in a just a few years. It sounds kind of crazy to say 2025 is just a few years away, but it really is. We're looking at a cap that's probably going to be up over $140 million.
Okay. And that's what I did, because especially with the Jeremy Grant contract extension, and I've had to try to factor that into my, because 4 years for $100 million for Jeremy Grant, if let's say that's what it ends up getting, $25 million sounds like a lot for Jeremy Grant, but like you said, that wouldn't be until 2023. And then, if it's almost over $150 million by 2025, when that deal's still in place, like that's not even a top 50 contract, probably top seven. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. It is not going to turn into a situation where all of a sudden it is, an absolutely rotten contract. And you're like, oh my gosh, how can we get out of this? That's now. James Harden getting paid $60 million 5 years from now. That's a little different because that's a pretty big number. But yeah, I've been kind of trying to caution people to don't get so stuck on this compared to today's cap. You got to think about where the cap's going to go in a few years.
Absolutely, man. Keith, I always have so much fun whenever we record. I enjoy listening to you. I literally just sit here as a fan and just listen and take it all in. I learned a lot. I hope our listeners will. I know they will enjoy it. Thank you so much. I know you got to get to your Celtics game, but just give everybody a chance right now to find everything you're doing. It's all great stuff. It's all great resources.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Keith Smith NBA. Be forewarned, I tweet a lot. Don't do what a couple people sent me during the trade deadline. Don't put notifications on for me. I'm not a news breaker. I'm not that kind of guy. You do not need those on. You're just going to be mad and throw your phone out the window with the amount of time it goes off. But you can find my written work if you're interested in this kind of stuff, salary cap stuff. Out of interest, I've got a Jalen Brunson piece coming soon over at spottrack.com. I'll also shout out our team over there. We have the most accurate salary information that is publicly available for the NBA, that you can get there. Every player, every team, every contract, all the details are there on SpotTrack. And then if you're interested in listening to more conversation like this, every day, Monday through Friday, Trevor Lane and I host a show called NBA Front Office Show. It's on YouTube, and you can find it on every major podcast player. So when you're done listening to Motor City Hoops, come find us. You can listen to us talk about the latest news and injury updates and all the stuff that's going around in the NBA. And then as we get close to the offseason, free agent previews and all sorts of stuff like that.
So thank you again to Keith. Make sure you check out his podcast. And seriously, I'm not just saying this because Keith was on. I go to SpotTrack for all of my caps, any information, whether it's Pistons or otherwise, that's the website I use because of Keith. He put me on that one actually when he was on Locked On Pistons with Koo. And ever since then, that's the only website I use for all the salary cap stuff. They have everything you would want there. As always, I want to thank Wes Davenport for everything he does for me and Motor City Hoops. And for anyone that was curious, he will be coming with me to be a part of the new podcast, The Pistons Pulse, that we announced at the beginning of the episode. I also want to thank all of you for listening to and supporting the podcast. We have three more episodes to close out the month of February before we make that move, which we hope all of you will make with us. Wednesday night will be our final instant recap and reaction episode after the Pistons play the Celtics. And then our final two weekly episode, I'll first be joined by Sham Mohill of the Detroit Bad Boys and at Sham Hamgod on Twitter. And then the final episode of Motor City Hoops, our guest will be Lauren Williams, Pistons beat writer for M Live. Thank you. Go Pistons, and we'll talk to you soon. Pistons need a three, and they have just under 3 seconds to do it. Here's Chauncey Billups. Here it is. He's got it.